College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
I was really pumped up for week one. You can double that for week two. When you look at the matchups, especially the ABC games, the three games that we have featuring Cincinnati, Ohio State, and then Texas A&M Clemson, and then the nightcap LSU at Texas, where game day is going to be in Austin for the first time in a decade. David Pollock will be there, and David Pollock joining us now. What's up, man?
Another week.
A very good opening week with a lot of different storylines. But for me, it starts with what we saw. He had his own night for himself, and that is the debut of Jalen Hurts. It's been a couple of days, but Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma and what he did. Now, I get it. I get that Houston's defense is not a good defense.
No, it's atrocious.
But at the same time, it's not Jalen Hurts' fault. And you couldn't stop the kid. The kid was fantastic running the ball, throwing the football, and also he didn't make a lot of mistakes on the field.
No, not when you go 20 of 23. It's kind of hard to find mistakes. You know, listen, it was another example to me of how good Lincoln Riley is. And it's insane what he draws up consistently and what he's able to accomplish. I mean, he rolled the pocket one time to the right and everything says swing pass and it just screams it. And then his right guard and his center pull back to the left and lead block and it's a quarterback run back the other direction. It's basically a quarterback counter. And it's stuff literally that you draw up on a napkin that would be like, oh, you don't have time to accomplish this. And then he draws it up and it works. So great debut for Jalen Hurts. And when you start naming a quarterback that does something that other quarterbacks at Oklahoma haven't done, when you have the likes of Murray and Mayfield, I'd say it was a pretty successful debut, and that's throwing for over 300, running for over 150. No Oklahoma quarterback ever done that. So Jalen Hurts, I would say, would be a success week one.
Okay, well, we saw the last 2 years unprecedented, where you bring in transfer quarterbacks and then you turn them into Heisman winners, and two transfer quarterbacks that have a ton of talent. What Lincoln Riley is doing, I can't recall in the 150-year history of college football being done. I mean, would you agree where he's taking guys from another system, he brings them in, and then within a year, within an offseason, turning them into superstars?
If I'm Lincoln Riley, like, I get the recruiting thing is you have to recruit kids and covet kids, and you have to kiss their butts, and that's part of the deal. I would just walk in and be like, hey, here's your letter of intent. Just go ahead and sign. Like, do you see what I did? Did you see what I just did with Mayfield? Did you see what I just did with Kyler Murray? Watch what I do with Jalen Hurts. Like, why would you not come here? Like, what every quarterback who's one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and you want to be in a quarterback-friendly offense. Like, here's what's unique about Lincoln Riley. We've talked about air raid for decades now and how it was the great equalizer between decent teams that didn't have enough talent that could all of a sudden win. A la Mike Leach has done it as successfully as anybody. Well, now you get dudes on the perimeter and dudes on the offensive line and dudes at running back. And now you get a quarterback that can also run. And now you encapsulate all that into one system that goes fast with all kinds of freaky athletes everywhere. And you see just unparalleled offense that we haven't seen anywhere else. And it's been an unbelievable ride for Lincoln Riley. I don't expect this to continue. I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to be Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, but I think he'll be very productive. He's going to win a ton of ball games, and he's going to put up really good numbers.
Well, how do you view Oklahoma now, especially now with their defense? And Herbie and I talked about this on Monday a little bit, but their defense with the new coordinator in Grinch, and now you see some speed, especially on the second level. If this defense is even just decent, how do you view Oklahoma when it comes to the playoff?
I think you put this team in the category now of they should be a playoff team. Now, their defense is better. They gave up 31, homie. But I like what I saw from them more. I like the aggressiveness more, the more physicality, more guys understanding exactly what's about to hit them in the face. So I think the jury's still out on their defense, and I want to see it against some other teams in the Big 12, which obviously they'll get some big tests, and I want to see them tried physically up front and see how they react. But awesome start for Oklahoma, and they're right where they should be. They're right in the playoff conversation. They're going to continue to be all season long.
Now, the biggest test you mentioned from the Big 12, we're going to see it this weekend in Austin, where Texas hosting LSU, and LSU comes in as a 5.5-point favorite.
You're blown away by that, huh?
I am completely blown away by that. Listen, I think Austin's environment's gotten much better, but we're talking about college kids. They got to go on the road. It's going to be a loud place, especially in prime time. Texas, okay. Austin's been waiting for this for a very, very long time. I think they have the better quarterback on the field. How do you view a game like this, especially with LSU? And I'm fully aware that the backfield is really beat up for Texas, but how do you view a game like this for LSU coming in as 5.5-point favorites?
Just for me, one of the most shocking revelations of the season in week one was LSU's offense. And listen, it's Georgia Southern. I get it, dude. I'm not over exaggerating. To me, it's more about concepts. To me, it's more about identity and who you are. When you look at LSU the last several years, it was all power run game. It was let the play clock bleed all the way down. That's exactly who they, then play action and keep everybody in and run a couple wide receivers out and be basic elementary offense. What you saw this past weekend was none of that. I saw the center trying to push the ref out of the way, for God's sakes, to give me the ball. Snap! Let's go! Snap the ball, I think, once every 21 seconds. I mean, night and day different. I saw more guys out in patterns. I saw more concepts that were passer friendly. It's Georgia Southern. I want to see it against Texas. Burrow, I think he was, what, 23 out of 28? Something stupid like that. I think he was 20 out of 24 at half and then threw for like 253 yards and five touchdowns. And you're talking about an LSU quarterback, by the way. That doesn't happen, okay? That's not normal. This isn't Oklahoma. This is LSU. So no matter who they've played offensively, it's never been a juggernaut. It's never looked like this. Just blown away by how fast they went. 14 different receivers catching the football. It's just, they didn't run it. They didn't try to run it that much, and they weren't all that successful. But unbelievable start for Joe Brady, who came in now, who's, you know, 28 years old, 29 years old, running that LSU offense.
For me, it's the impact of Brady. What, in less than a year, he comes over from the Saints as a passing coordinator here, and he's co-offensive coordinator for this team. It feels like we've been waiting for 15 years for LSU to get a quarterback that can throw the ball and stretch the field with all the talent that they have on the left and the right side.
I've been waiting for an offensive coordinator that can learn how to coach them and get them in a position to succeed. I understand what you're saying. They've had talented kids, too. Mettenberger probably was at 2012, but their offenses haven't set up their quarterbacks for a lot of success. And I think this offense, what you're seeing right now, is more friendly, absolutely 100%, and you're going to see more success from... I mean, Joe Burrow was adequate last year. You bring in Joe Brady already. Look at the year. Look at the transformation. And I mean, that was five games for Joe Burrow last year.
Burrow's been a different quarterback the second half of last season, getting more comfortable, and then you add Brady, who's the passing coordinator, and a completely different concept. And the thing I'm most looking forward to against Texas is I am sure they didn't open up more than half the playbook there against Georgia Southern. They're not revealing everything before they face Texas on tape.
You saw enough to feel comfortable with what you saw with LSU to know that it's a shell of the game plan. Listen, very few of these people are showing what they're going to do. James Cooley at Georgia is not showing you everything he's going to do the next when he plays Notre Dame in 4 weeks. You know, same thing. Brady's not unloading the kitchen sink in week one against Georgia Southern, but I think you can always see conceptually what you are. And conceptually, sending multiple guys out, using their tight ends in the passing game, it's a big shift from what it used to be. And not only that, just having, here's the thing, when you call a play, it's the ability to have answers to the play. It's ability to know if one's covered, I turn now and I know two's open. You know what I'm saying? And understanding those progressions. Well-coached offensive players and well-coached quarterbacks, you see them go from one to two to three quickly with no panic. Guys that don't have a great understanding of what they're trying to accomplish or what the defense is trying to do to them are the ones that go one, oh crap, two, and kind of stammer. So you saw there's answers in this offense already. Just, I know it's against Georgia Southern, but week one.
Okay, now on the other side, LSU, we played a couple of sound bites yesterday on SportsCenter where defensive player, and then Orgeron, they complimented Ehlinger in a backhanded way by talking about him running the football, not so much passing, and how there's no real fear for LSU and that defense coming out on Saturday night with Ehlinger throwing the ball. What's your reaction to that concept that Ehlinger isn't too much of a threat with the arm?
I understand why people would say that. If you've watched him throughout his career early on, I thought – He was a better runner than he's a thrower. He's very Tim Tebow-esque, by the way. Like, I've compared him for that for years, except for I think he actually throws the ball better than Tim. Mm-hmm. He's not as big as physical as Tim, but This guy's he's a special, unique type of player, and he can throw the football. And by the way, if you want to watch him, go watch the Georgia game, because he played against an SEC team last year to end the season. Say what you want about, you know, Georgia not wanting to be there. Ellinger was there, and he was doing just fine. And he is physical. He does like to run the ball, but I think his touch has developed over the years really nicely. And Colin Johnson's legit in wide receiver. LSU, I promise you, will play a lot of man-to-man, because LSU has one of the best secondaries in the country.
DBU, right, according to them.
One of the best secondaries in the country. You throw a jump ball near Colin Johnson, that dude's a freak show at 6'6", 230, and can catch it all over the yard. I do agree that if I'm going to take one thing away, I'm going to make sure Ellinger doesn't beat me running the football. But Sam's evolved big time with his arm, and he's more capable now than he's ever been to use it. And if you want to cheat and think he's just a running quarterback, you're going to get a slice of it. You're going to get a slice of it on Saturday.
Are you surprised that the spread's 5.5?
Man, I don't know much about spreads, dude. I just love football.
But do you view LSU nearly 6 points better than Texas Saturday night?
I would say I think LSU, when I look at LSU rosters top to bottom, offensive, defensive lines, linebackers, secondaries, I would say LSU's favorite in all of those. I mean, I think LSU has a better offensive line. I think LSU has a better defensive line. I think LSU has better corners, better safeties. I think LSU has better linebackers. So I think they're across the board, I think they're better, but I do think Sam Ellinger is a wild card, because I think he has shown he's been a better version of Joe Burrow, but we just don't know what to expect. But they're at home, so I mean, I think LSU should be the favorite. I don't know how the point spread system works and stuff. I think LSU, if you go unit by unit, would be a favorite over Texas.
Okay, if it was 2.5 points, then I think I would be with you with the LSU thing.
Are you a gambling guy, by the way?
I am not, but okay. I'm aware what Vegas does and why they do it. They want to get people on both sides. I'm fully aware of it, but 5.5 to me is like, whoa, that's telling me something. That's telling me something about Vegas knowing that LSU's coming in. And because I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to say, I want to take Texas at 5.5 points. They're just
at home,
sitting there, right?
Experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tom Herman in big games has always been really well. I think Tom Herman's 3-0 against the SEC. I think that's his record. So he's done pretty well.
He has done pretty well. And, I'm just curious. I'm also curious to see how Ellinger holds up, because physically he's going to take a ton of hits, especially when you don't have a real threat in that backfield or you don't have any depth in that backfield. That's going to play a big role in a game like this.
And that was an issue a year ago for them. It's very hard in college football, Kevin, to go 14 plays and go down the field and score touchdowns. Because here's what happens. A holding penalty. Now it's 2nd and 20. You know, you get one offsides and one mistake, and now you're talking about it's just really hard to overcome. They're not an explosive offense. They don't create those explosive plays. And at the running back spot, they especially don't. He's their best running back. So I think that is an issue to watch with this offense. If it gets really one-dimensional, and here's the thing. If I'm Tom Herman, I have to be really smart with how I run Sam Ellinger. Now, listen, I got Rice coming up next week, so I can run him more in the LSU game. After that, I got Oklahoma State. And then West Virginia, maybe I can rest him a little bit. But then I got Oklahoma. And then I got TCU. They're going to have to ride with Ellinger and his wheels, and he's going to have to be durable. He's going to have to be a machine for them to win and stay undefeated.
We'll be back in a minute. But first, a word from Allstate. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
You talk about teams and offenses relying on one quarterback and how the season will play out. I just go to USC and the devastating injury of JT Daniels. Done for the year, torn ACL, meniscus. Now they go to a true freshman in Keaton Slovis. And this young man, a three-star recruit coming out of Arizona, and suddenly now he's front and center. And you look at USC's schedule, they got Stanford this weekend, the unknown with KJ Costell on the other side. But their schedule for the next 6 weeks is absolutely brutal. What's your opinion about Clay Helton and the state of USC after losing JT Daniels?
First of all, can I point out again the transfer portal and how it affects everybody?
Yep.
Can we point this out, how when a competition now is lost in college football, instead of being a backup that you're one play away, you leave your university, and this is what happens? Not only does this affect USC's offense and defense and every part of their team, this affects their coaching staff. This affects everybody's future at the program now, because their season is done. They are done. They are cooked. If there was a number that Lynn Swann, the AD of USC, had for Clay Helton, he's not going to match it. He's not going to match that. He's not going to beat Stanford, BYU, Utah. No, it's not going to happen. So I think that it just shows that one injury can literally define the whole season and the whole career of a coach, because I don't see Clay Helton now being able to survive this, because USC is going to go 5-7. 6-6 down the stretch of the season, playing a true freshman quarterback for the second year in a row now, and going to have to take your lumps in a new season. And it sucks for USC, but this is bad news.
And if you felt like coming into the season, Helton needed to win at least 8 games. And there's no way. I mean, when you got Stanford, like you mentioned, at BYU, Utah, at Washington, you have a bye, and then you go to Notre Dame. I'm not sure. They may go in that stretch right there, 1-4 at best.
It's not good.
it's just a weird spot.
And you think about like all the people affected by this. Graham Harrell just comes in as OC. Drevno just comes in as offensive line coach, and all the momentum, all the recruits for next year, and just boom, gone. One injury.
Yeah, it's devastating.
Now the transfer portal thing. Can he come back? Can Sears come back?
Helton said earlier in the week that he's open to the idea if Sears wants to come back.
Yeah, that'd be a real good idea.
Right?
He did dang right he's open. If he likes his job, he's going to be very open. Hey, Sears.
Yeah.
You made a mistake, bro. You made a mistake. No big deal. Come on back.
But I think Sears' biggest issue is not just, going to second on the depth chart. He got dropped down to third and fourth on that depth chart, and then he was out, right?
Yeah.
He had Fink there, and then Sears was done after that. And
USC's in trouble.
Yeah. This young man, Keaton Slovis, I wish him the best, true freshman. We saw a bunch of true freshmen make their mark. I mean, you saw it firsthand with Bo Nix the other night. That was an amazing performance against Oregon. What's your initial thoughts on how that game played out? Oregon having the opportunity up by 15 points in the third quarter.
Could have been up by more.
Yes.
It should have been up by more early. Yep. I mean, if you're watching that game, Oregon was in complete control of the game. And late in they let them hang around, and they let the freshmen get the running game go. Auburn got the running game go. The biggest difference in that game was the running game in the second half. Whitlow, he started to get down, started to get extra possessions. Bo Nix scrambling around, making plays. But we knew it coming into the game that Bo Nix was special, and he's got something about him, and we've been talking about it for weeks with this kid. He grew up in Auburn. He's not playing for himself. Like, he's playing for the university and loves everything about Auburn. And it's special, man. It's contagious. I think he'll continue to grow and have a good season. And Auburn survived in a game where it feels like they probably could have lost and maybe should have lost. But now continue to get it rolling. Schedule backs off a little bit, but everybody knows what's coming in late season play for them.
Yeah, they had a brutal schedule, but when you look at the top part of the SEC, they had a fantastic opening weekend. But I want to get your first thoughts about Tennessee. You watched the tape recently. That loss against Georgia State, there are a lot of things to dissect. To me, it's just how they got punched in the face in the third and the fourth quarter, and they didn't have an answer back here. And Georgia State controlled the momentum, and they dictated what they wanted to do on the road in Knoxville, which is so stunning. A team that won 2 games a year ago, a program that started just a decade ago. What did the tape show you about Tennessee here?
Disturbing on several fronts. You look at a couple of the touchdowns, a couple of the big plays. One of the touchdowns, Tennessee's running an outside backer defensive end on the field at the snap. He literally runs in, never gets in a stance, lines up and kind of runs himself right out of the play because he's not lined up. You got guys, another play, another big long play by the quarterback that was a big run. You got nobody in the A gap, B gap, C gap on the left side. Nobody on the A gap on the right side. Like, it's talking about, you're talking about individual things that everybody made fun of Butch Jones, of the corny sayings of five star hearts and brick by brick. But the level of disorganization that Tennessee showed and the lack of organization is very concerning. And if I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm already upset as it is enough. But to watch that stuff that should be controlled and should be ironed out and that shouldn't even happen at a high school level, you gotta be upset.
Now, there was a silver lining, Vols fans, if you're listening. Pollock saw somebody on the field that he thinks could be very special in the backfield.
When you watch tape and you go back and you watch all these tapes, and we have access, it's so cool to watch the different views. So you get the tight copy where it's just the offensive line, and then you get the copy where it's everybody else. And it's kind of cool when you can really watch a running back and see holes. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. You're filming behind them. So you can see holes that open up before – you see holes that weren't there, and you see holes that are there, and you see anticipation. You see guys that can make people miss. And when I watch Tennessee, if you watch this true freshman, Gray, at the running back spot, he looked like he has the goods. He looks like he's a guy that can make you miss. Now listen, Ty Chandler fumbled a couple times, and Tennessee fumbled the ball four times on the day. It wasn't pretty offensively, but he's a guy that I looked at and I was like, Gray's got something to him. He's got some ability to make people miss. The offensive line didn't give him, you know, a ton of space, but you could tell that if you're going to watch Tennessee, the offensive line will be what it is. But if you watch number three carry the football, a true freshman, you know, I think he's out of Memphis, Tennessee. He's a guy that has some juice and has some goods.
Total 80 yards from scrimmage. We saw a lot more of Eric Gray as the game played on over Ty Chandler. That's a good sign. 29 yards on the ground. He caught six passes for 51 yards. We'll see how that plays out for Tennessee's offense. All right. Just a week ago, you had me putting down 8 wins off the start for Missouri, top 10. What happened in the opener here against Wyoming?
See, what happened was...
Come on!
You know, sometimes, Kevin, you look at the schedule and you go, man, the stars are really going to align for a team. And Missouri was that team. They had a schedule laid out in front of them that they couldn't mess up, that nobody was going to mess up, right? Start with Wyoming? Nope. It was ugly, man. It was ugly. And listen, it's one of those things, too. First of all, Kelly Bryant looked phenomenal.
He did early on, right?
Yeah. And listen, he had one interception, whatever. He threw for 423 yards. Like, that's not – Kelly Bryant's never done that. He was more like a game manager. It was very Jalen Hurts-esque, the turnover between production with Kelly Bryant. I mean, he set the world on fire. But when you give up 27 points in a second quarter – I can hand this to you and tell you you're not going to win very many games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't just implode on yourself because it wasn't a beatdown, and obviously it shouldn't be a beatdown. And if you look at the box score and you look at the production, you win. You win the team stats battle, but it's always the same in football. When you give the ball to the other team and you turn it over, you're going to lose. 3 turnovers for Missouri, 0 turnovers for Wyoming, 300 yards on the ground for Wyoming.
That's disgusting.
Can you welcome that should never happen. You want to pound your chest and be an SEC guy? Our lines of scrimmage are better than everybody.
Yep.
Really, bro? Wyoming just drubbed you for 300. Georgia State just pounded on you. Like, that's not good. So that was a horrible prediction, Kevin. I can't believe you gave that one. That's terrible.
Well, you know what? When you look at the schedule, their next 5 games are at home this coming weekend against West Virginia.
We looked at the schedule. Yes, I did this. Don't do it again. I looked at the schedule and said Wyoming, West Virginia, Southeast Missouri State, South Carolina. Ole Miss, just lost. Ole Miss stinks too. Troy, Vanderbilt, Kentucky.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about something that was tailor-made to set out in front of you and have success. Lord have mercy.
It was a bad, bad look.
It's a bad day at the office, bro.
Yeah, transfer quarterbacks. All right, we talked a little bit about Jalen Hurts and Kelly Bryant. There are a couple other guys. I want to get your early thoughts considering you saw them briefly at Georgia. What'd you think of Justin Fields at Ohio State in that offense? What'd you think of Jacob Eason in that offense at Washington?
Pretty good day for Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Pretty solid day out the gates. Now, listen, it's... These things are always they're always tough to judge. When all of Justin Fields' throws, first of all, I'm not knocking the kid. He was 18 to 25, ran the ball for a couple scores, like looked really, really good. Did you see any wide receivers that weren't wide open?
I mean, wide open.
Okay. It was very, very easy. I'll say this. Justin Fields looks like the real deal. I think it's going to be a good fit for them. I went back and watched the tape. I'll say some, I'll see some, I'm not overly concerned with him. It's his first start. I saw some things that I think he really has to improve. I'm talking about really has to improve. When you run that zone read, Kevin, you have to be able to understand who you're reading and understand the give and understand the pull. He made a lot of really poor decisions in that realm. He made a lot of decisions that are going to have to get better if Ohio State's going to try to get to the playoff and continue that success like you've seen from them in the past. He still had a phenomenal day. I'm not knocking Justin Fields. But when you spin to Jacob Eason, first of all, if you watched him his first year, the talent is insane. We just talked about Missouri. As a true freshman, he leads Georgia in a comeback win at Missouri. And it was unbelievable. And his ability to throw the football down the field is Trevor Lawrence-esque. The dude can sling the pill like most people can't sling the pill in college football. But to go 27 to 36 and to have that much poise and that much – I saw some big-time throws too. Some I fitted in tight windows. He knew his answers. You know, listen, this Washington offense we saw the last couple years was a joke.
Yeah.
It was bad.
It was bad.
Like, we all held on to Jake Browning as a true freshman. Jake Browning the last couple years was atrocious.
He took big steps backwards.
All awful.
After that Alabama game in the playoffs.
It was really – Alabama knocked him back to, like, fifth grade and mm-hmm. never recovered. But Jacob Eason, obviously, they need to bring this offense back to where it was, making big plays. They're going to be physical. They got a bunch of big guys. They're going to be able to run the football, the passing game for them down the field. I think that was one of those things you want to see continue to grow and get better, because that's going to define whether Washington's really, really good or good.
Now, you and I, yeah, really, really good and good. You and I are big on Utah, and Oregon could win out the rest of the way, but that one blemish in how they lost, we'll see how that plays a role down the season as people, you know, kind of make these judgments and narratives. How do you view Washington with Jacob Eason in this conference? Is this a conference that they can win with Jacob Eason?
It's always tough to judge again. Eastern Washington. They're not setting the world on fire, but we saw a lot of teams that we talked about across college football that struggled with other. You know what I want to see? Cal next week for Washington. Cal's not good offensively, by the way. They stink. They're mm-hmm. awesome. They're awful offensively. They have been for years. Their defense is filthy. Their defense is very legit. Cal's defense will be Jacob Eason's test. That will show me a lot about where Jacob Eason is, because the thing I didn't like about him in the past when I've seen him, when I saw him at Georgia his freshman year or to start his sophomore season, he had his mechanics were sloppy. And when he got rushed, they got really sloppy. And he relied too much on ability. You're going to get tested by Cal right out the gates. But that USC game, does that look as tough for you now?
No,
I
mean, no.
So if you think about that, and then you got Stanford. I think Stanford's a good team, not great.
Mm-hmm.
You got Oregon, and then you got Utah, who you host.
Yeah.
So,
and in between that, you have a bye.
Washington State at the end of the season you host. Every significant game now, I think, for Washington is going to be at their place, which is a really good home field atmosphere. Washington definitely is going to be right there in the mix for a playoff spot, but they're going to have to go through our Utes, man, my Utah Utes. Man.
Yeah, we both are high on the Utah, and we'll see how that plays out the rest of the season.
I was high on Missouri, too, so.
Yeah. Well, there's a different reason why you were high on Missouri. You just looked at their schedule. You didn't really look at the whole entire team and how this is going to play out. I hear I'm sticking up for you already on your first big,
appreciate
big
that,
loss,
bro.
Right? I do want to – big losses, and I know they came in unranked. I want to get your thoughts on how Florida State just flubbed the whole thing in the second half against Boise State with the true freshman quarterback, and Bachmeier was phenomenal. He took so many hits, came back up, threw the ball 51 times. What was your initial thoughts on how Florida State played that game, and then the aftermath?
Here's something that is an unfortunate part of college football, but once you create the negative train, Rich Rodriguez, you know, a couple years ago at Michigan, once it gets started in the motion, Charlie Strong at Texas, remember?
Yep.
Like, once the negative vibes come, you got to do something to create a spark. FSU's offense had that spark, man. They were flying all over the place. They scored 5 out of their 6 possessions, and they looked – Kendall Briles looked like the second coming of his dad. Looked
yep.
like Art Briles. Everything looked great. Adversity came. and they folded up, man. And Boise answered. And listen, the Boise State, by the way, this kind of drives me crazy. We watch all the flashbacks and all that stuff. Boise had a run that was magical. They were one in four against their last Power Five opponents. Okay. This isn't the Boise of old. Like, we're not, this is not a true freshman quarterback like you just talked about that just did all that damage. So, I think it's interesting. Willie Taggart, I think, would do himself a good service too. Don't talk about dehydration. Like, we had guys that were dehydrated after the game. That's part of your job, by the way.
Yeah.
It's part of everybody's job. But just the negative train for FSU, I imagine now, just creates more steam. And in a couple weeks, you got Virginia. And then Louisville, by the way, looks a lot better. NC State, like, and then Clemson obviously will be a huge test. But Florida State is going to have to be able to take lumps like they did a year ago. But now let's bounce back. You know, you didn't look like you did a year ago. You look like you had some life for a little bit at least and fought hard and made some explosive plays.
And it's just awkward too, considering, you know, Willie had some issues there with water at Oregon with players, and you're just sitting there and you're like, oh, Willie, come on, what are you doing?
Don't say anything.
You don't need to say anything, especially you live in Tallahassee. You guys are in that environment the entire summer before that game. You shouldn't use that as part of the excuse here on what happened in that second half. It was an awkward when he said it, I was like, oh man, Willie, do not hang your hat on this. This is not something you need
don't
to talk about.
No.
We'll see how that changes and how that plays out. Listen, it's great to have you on board with us again. This is just one of two hits because you're going to be with us on Friday, and that's where we get the chance to dig a little bit deeper into the weekend. And I feel like this weekend, it's just week two, but I feel like this weekend will determine a lot of things going forward, especially in three or four major conferences. So, Pollock, can't wait for it. Now, of course, we'll be talking to you when you're going to be in Austin on Friday.
Appreciate it, brother.
We'll be back in a minute with Ivan Maisel, but first, a word from Carhartt. You know who works hard? Rookies. Sure, they make mistakes, but no one's got more to prove. Knowing each day's another opportunity to outwork them all and earn the respect they deserve. Point is, no one outworks a rookie. That's why after 130 years, Carhartt still approaches each day with the passion and work ethic of a company that's 130 years young. Same hunger, same determination, same giant chip on the shoulder. And in the same way a rookie needs to work hard to earn the respect of their peers, everything Carhartt makes has to keep earning the respect of the hardworking people who wear it. That's why Carhartt still works like a rookie, and why Carhartt will keep outworking them all for the next 130 years too. Visit Carhartt.com/CFB to learn more and shop this season's hardest working gear. Great to have the host of the Down and Distant podcast, Ivan Maisel, joining us. And it's going to be in the feed tomorrow as he takes a look at USC receding from greatness. Ivan, first off, what's the podcast about when you talk about receding from greatness and that USC program?
Well, it has nothing to do with this team and the soap opera regarding Clay Helton. So everybody can relax there. What I did, Kevin, was took everybody back to that moment when Vince Young, right next to that right pylon at the Rose Bowl, 14 years ago, almost 14 years ago, and how what nobody understood at that moment, nobody could understand at that moment, was that that was the end of the USC dynasty. And the next three seasons, they were close, but they got in their own way each time, and I looked at why they got in their own way each time, and then how it suddenly in 2009 it just all caved in. And by the, you know, once the 2009 season ended, Pete Carroll was gone, the NCAA came in, and it's been a struggle for the last decade with the notable, you know, with one notable exception. So it's really a story about how dynasties end and we never see it coming.
And there's a generation that just grew up thinking that USC was the most dominant program during that window, you know, where you had Leinart, you had Bush, and they were just Carson Palmer. They were producing number one picks everywhere. But people forget they went through a major, major lull before Pete Carroll. Can you give me an idea of the effect that Pete Carroll has with college kids and how he could turn that program around?
Yeah, and I got into this a little bit in the podcast, Kevin. Pete Carroll is he's an electric figure. He's not only a brilliant tactician on the field, but he collects people. He's got a magnetic personality, and he was just the right guy at the right time. You know, you are, especially when the NFL wasn't in L.A., and even I would say now that it's back in L.A., the coach at USC is a prominent figure in a major American city in L.A. that in a way that he is in no other major American city. You know, most NFL cities have been graveyards for college football. You know, if you look at the struggle that a Stanford, that a Houston, that a Northwestern has to attract attention and crowds, well, L.A. still loves its Trojans. And Pete Carroll just galvanized that city. And USC football was a thing. Movie stars and music stars were on the sideline at practice, much less games. And he cultivated all that, and it made USC, I mean, what 17-year-old five-star recruit could turn that down? You know, and that's how he pulled in an incredible array of talent for 4 or 5 years. And it seemed like it was much longer than that, but he was only there 9 years. And the first year wasn't very good, and the last year wasn't very good. In between, they won 7 straight Pac-10 at the time titles.
You're right, though. It's wild to think it was only a 9-year window, and honestly, a 5-year window of dominance. And they gave us so many phenomenal moments. But USC is one of those schools, just like, you know, that we've seen with Notre Dame, where the expectations that we've seen, like with Texas in the past, they go through these lulls. We saw with Alabama in the past, where they have the history, the reputation, but it takes a dynamic coach to change things around. And it feels like we're seeing that at Notre Dame. They're trying to get over the hump. What did you think, first impressions on Monday night with Brian Kelly in their first game coming off that playoff loss to Clemson as they faced off against the surprising Louisville team, especially in the first half?
Yeah, you know, I came away from that game thinking much more about Louisville than I did Notre Dame, just because we expected, well, I won't speak for you. You may have sussed this out, but I expected not to see very much from Louisville. And Scott Satterfield has come in there, and those guys played hard, and they seem like they adapted very quickly to his system. And, you know, this is a team that basically mailed it in last year, and all of a sudden they were fighting Notre Dame into the fourth quarter. And that's not what anybody expected. I would assume that Brian Kelly walks away. You know, that's a coach's dream to have to win the game and yet get your players' attention by how poorly they performed vis-a-vis expectations from him and from all of us. So I'm sure practice this week in South Bend will be crisp.
But that's how you get their attention quickly, right?
Yeah, yeah. Book, I thought would be a little sharper than he was, but you know, the defense played well when it had to, and they controlled the game. It just wasn't as easy as we all assumed it would.
Yeah, and I think that 18 to 22-year-olds watching tape of Louisville last year saw a team that quit, so they thought that that's what the expectations were coming out on the field. You're not seeing the best of the best of these guys, and they look – I'm with you. I was stunned with what Louisville did in that first half, but they came to play for a coach that they wanted to play for. We didn't see that last year in Petrino's final stint at Louisville. We saw guys just give up. So maybe the talent is there for Satterfield to build off of, but not there to get to, you know, where he wants to get in the ACC, but at least to start things for a program and the idea of playing a little tougher. How do you view Notre Dame? How do you view the reputation of Notre Dame? You know, Paul Feinbaum earlier in the week made a joke in jest that, you know, after their performances in the college football playoff, they should be banned from ever playing in a playoff. How do you view the concept of Notre Dame in this playoff era?
I think it's a really small needle that they have to thread. You know, for so many years, we lived with Notre Dame as, you know, winning all ties. You know, people looked first to Notre Dame. They were the only national school in a regional sport. Now there are several national schools in a national sport, and they're the only one that's not in a conference and not bolstered by that conference race, both week to week and in the eyes of the public. And I think it's hurt them. I think it's cost them. They have perfectly good historical and business reasons for remaining independent. And, you know, God bless them if that's what they're going to do. But I think there's a price that they're paying for it.
Now, we'll see how this plays out. Of course, they have the standard Notre Dame schedule down the road. And I like Ian Book a lot, but I'm with you. He did not look sharp early on, did not look like he was ready to take a couple of hits early in the game. And then he got everything, you know, that last turnover to close out the first half really changed the entire momentum of the game, where they got the opportunity to score, and Book got that second chance after his turnover, and that motivated him. And I really like the quarterback. He's one of those under-the-radar guys that you would think, being the quarterback at Notre Dame, you would get a lot of press, but he hasn't generated a lot of press because it's been dominated, and it will be dominated for now by guys like Trevor Lawrence and Tua Tagovailoa. And Trevor Lawrence getting ready for Texas A&M and Kellen Mond this weekend, 3:30 Eastern, that game at Clemson. A&M coming in a year ago, they lose by 2 points at home. Kellen Mond's there, and it was a game that sparked a lot of enthusiasm with the base because they spent all this money with Jimbo, and then you saw it on the field, the quick turnaround, like, oh, you know what? We can go head-to-head. Here they are coming into a game where they're 17.5-point dogs, and Trevor Lawrence, he didn't see a lot of action in that first game because Kelly Bryant was the quarterback. What are your early impressions on a game like this matchup for Clemson?
Well, you know, it got my attention for a couple of reasons, Kevin. One, Trevor Lawrence did not play well in his first game. You know, he played okay, but, you know, for a kid who just, you know, was so fun to watch last year and such a marvel to see him be so poised and make so few young mistakes. You know, he threw 4 picks in 397 attempts last year. You know, and he threw 2 in 23 on Saturday. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure anybody, you know, I didn't see enough of a game to be able to tell you, well, it was this or it was that, but I can read a stat sheet and I know what everybody said after the game. So, you know, speaking of guys that, you know, got, coach has got their attention this week, I'm sure Trevor's at the top of that list. And, you know, and yet Clemson cruised and Etienne had a great game. I put him on my, you know, first week Heisman ballot after such a great game against Georgia Tech. But he's, you know, if he can run that way against Texas and A&M, I'll be really impressed. They're going to need a sharper Trevor Lawrence on Saturday.
Yeah, over 200 yards for Etienne, and the guy, you know, he doesn't gain a lot in those first two carries, and then the final 10 carries, 205 yards. He was fantastic for that team. And it's funny. When you go back to college football 15 years ago, the running back was the storyline along with the quarterback. But now the way we look at the passing game and how we look at quarterbacks, how we look at a guy like Trevor Lawrence, you know, ETN's under the radar. He doesn't get the headline, and then he comes in, and he's not one of those guys that you're going to give the ball 20 to 25 times in the college game, but he can still make an impact when he touches the ball. I want to get your thoughts here with Alabama, especially early on against Duke. And we're watching that game, and the game's on ABC, and you're like, uh-oh, it's scoreless after one quarter. What's going on? Are the injuries starting to build up? Is, you know, suspensions in the first half that they have to deal with? And then eventually Tua gets on track with Judy and the offense looks fantastic. But you had a feeling like, okay, if Duke had any depth, this could have been a game. What was your first reaction when you watched the Alabama game and your impression of this team coming into the season?
Well, my initial reaction was, man, David Cutcliffe can coach some ball. I mean, you know, they come out running triple option stuff. You know, Alabama hadn't practiced that. but, you know, once the Alabama coaches adjusted and everybody and the guys who had been suspended came in the second quarter and the talent asserted itself, then I switched and started watching another game, to be honest with you. But so I didn't come away too alarmed about Alabama. I just thought, you know, they went out there and they, you know, scraped off the rust and eventually got after a team that they should have gotten after. You know, we're not going to learn a whole lot about them this week either with New Mexico State, but I liked how even with the early hiccups, it didn't really rattle Tua. You know, his numbers ended up being fantastic. And I think it's, you know, I think we're off, in his case, we're off to what we expected, and it really excited to see how his season unfolds.
We'll be back in a minute, but first, a word from Goodyear. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven.
I'm excited to see how the season unfolds also for Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, just because I want to see how this offense looks as he is given the reins to Josh Gattison, and how long that will go on. Shea Patterson looked very good after they worked out some kinks early on. Your impressions on this conversation with Michigan and the pressure on Harbaugh, and the idea that this is the year, this is potentially a make or break year. Not, you know, and that's not so much from, I think, you know, the Michigan administration. I feel like that's from everybody else.
Yeah, it's this interesting thing where, you know, in an age when we all immediately go to DEFCON 4, you know, nobody around Michigan is doing that. You know, the fans are a little disgruntled, but not much. I mean, he's still their guy, and he's been, you know, one of them, and he's their guy, and been that way for more than three decades. But, you know, to your point, this is the year when Ohio State is switching stuff around. And, you know, if you can't take advantage of a first-year head coach with a younger team, then, you know, when are you going to do it? Now, I'm a little curious about Michigan on Saturday, just because playing Army can, you know, that can leave a mark.
Can wear you down, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, that offense and that discipline will really test any team, but to come up against it in week two, I'm a little curious. I'm more curious about that game than I might otherwise be.
Yeah, I'm curious, too, to see if there's more of a ground-and-pound philosophy against this team, or will they just stick to what they want to do in this new offense and spread it out a little bit against Army and work the matchups. You brought up Ohio State and Ryan Day and Justin Fields. Your early impression, it's hard to do that against FAU where you're Lane's squad, because you look up and suddenly it's 28-0. They score four touchdowns in a matter of four minutes and 8 seconds, the total of those four drives. But when you see Ryan Day and you see the energy and you see a guy with the talent that Justin Fields has, how do you view Ohio State this season?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was impressed with what Pollock said about Justin Fields last week, you know, on this show. And it made me look at Fields a little differently Saturday, and I came away a little more impressed. You know, I'm not impressed with a guy that loses a battle for a job and then leaves. And I understand why quarterbacks do that. And I understand if you know, and it's worked out for him. I mean, he's starting quarterback at Ohio State, so good move by Justin Fields. But, you know, I'm still a little skeptical about anybody that does that. And, but, you know, he played really well Saturday. Again, not the kind of competition he's going to see this Saturday. And you know, one thing about week one games is you're never sure who's good and who's bad. But Cincinnati sure looked impressive against UCLA. And you know, that's you know that Ohio State's got to play well to win that game. So this is a good – I think the overriding theme of week two is not only are there marquee games, great marquee games, but you've got all these other kind of games like an Ohio State-Cincinnati where the team that is expected to win had better play well, because if they don't, then they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I really think, you know, it's, again, like you said, week two, but we are going to learn a lot of things in the triple header on ABC with Cincinnati. I really like Cincinnati, and Ohio State's going to get tested. I can't wait to see how Clemson responds with A&M there. And A&M, Jimbo and Dabo, give me more. I say that every year. I want more Jimbo and Dabo. Unfortunately, with Jimbo now in another conference, I'm okay with these two guys meeting every single season because I think that's a great thing for college football. And then, of course, the nightcap, that big test with LSU and Texas. We're going to learn which school is really, really back, right? And we'll see how that plays out. Ivan, thank you so much. Cannot wait. For again the Down and Distance podcast tomorrow. It'll be on the feed tomorrow. USC receding from greatness. Always a pleasure, Ivan. Thank you.
Okay, Kevin, thanks.
Want to thank Ivan and David for joining us today and thank our sponsors, Allstate, Carhartt, and Goodyear. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast wherever you download your shows. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back on Friday.